Our next speaker is Cook County Board President. And here are a few things about our speaker today. Number one, she is a frequent attendee at City Club of Chicago events, for which we are enormously grateful. Our guest today also encourages her leadership team to speak at the City Club of Chicago, for which we are enormously grateful. She earned her bachelor's degree and master's degree from the University of Chicago. She is the mother of two beautiful children and grandmother of three beautiful geniuses, Braxton, Xavier, and Ava. Ladies and gentlemen, Toni Preckwinkle. Madam President. All right, all set?
Thank you. Good afternoon. My grandchildren will be grateful to hear that they got a shout out today. First of all, I want to thank you for inviting me here. Addressing the City Club has essentially become part of my budget process, and I have the coffee mugs to prove it. Before I begin, I want to acknowledge again Dan Cronin. Where are you, Dan? There we go. Thank you. You know, in this season of bitter partisanship, I really want to thank Dan. He's a friend. We've worked closely together on regional economic development issues and couldn't have achieved the things that we've done without his help and support. So thank you, Dan. I really appreciate it. We've got a number of county folks here. Would my team please stand? I'm in trouble if I start calling people out, but I want to acknowledge Dr. Jay Shannon, of course, who's head of our health and hospital system. I want to acknowledge Arnold Randall from the Forest Preserve District, who's right over here. I want to thank Rich Minacchio for joining us from the Housing Authority of Cook County, and, of course, all the bureau chiefs and department heads who've joined us as well. And while I'm giving shout-outs, a shout-out to Jesse Neves, who wrote my speech. In my 6 years as county board president, we've passed six budgets that have closed over $1.4 billion in deficits. We've taken the tough but necessary steps to ensure accountability from our operations and our employees and to support our core services and advance our policy priorities. Last week, I presented my executive budget recommendation to the Cook County Board of Commissioners to solve for our $174 million deficit this year. It's a balanced budget that addresses the outsized legacy debt we inherited and the immense challenges at the pension fund, as well as reversing the long-standing diversion of resources away from infrastructure. Fortunately, in a climate of turmoil in the state, our financial outlook has improved. And in fact, all three bond rating agencies upgraded our bond rating from questionable to stable, and firmly in the investment grade earlier this year. Thank you. I should call out Ivan Samstein, our chief financial officer. He always likes to prompt me to say that. As president, I'm responsible for the budget recommendation, and I believe that that responsibility includes coming before you to explain it. But in reality, the budget I'm presenting and advocating for is largely outside of my office. In fact, 87% of our budget, 87%, is dedicated to public health and public safety. Most of our budget is dedicated to supporting 23,000 employees, and of those employees, only 7% are in the offices of the president. I say this because I want to make it clear. I'm not here advocating on behalf of myself or my team. I'm carrying out my responsibility as president to support critical countywide services and advance shared priorities. To do that, there were two possibilities, both of them difficult. One, I could put forth a proposal that would significantly impair our criminal justice system over the next 3 years and undermine the progress we're making in public health. It would mean over 1,000 fewer positions in criminal justice, including lawyers in the state's attorney's office, lawyers in the public defender's office, sheriff's deputies, critical support staff, and programs and services. Instead of focusing on becoming more fair and effective, we would be just trying to get by. So instead, I'm calling for a moderate tax on sugar and artificially sweetened beverages. This will not impact natural or nutritional beverages, such as milk or milk-based products, natural fruit juices, baby formula, weight reduction, or therapeutic meal replacements. We're targeting beverages with high quantities of sugar and artificial sweeteners, such as carbonated soft drinks, sports drinks, and energy drinks. My motivation is to support our public health and safety systems and the communities that depend on them. However, we should not overlook the positive health impacts it promotes. Just last week, a case of serendipity if there ever was one, the World Health Organization released a report that said taxing sweetened beverages can lower obesity, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and tooth decay. Our own health system sees this firsthand. Dr. Shannon reports that we spent more than $200 million in the last 12 months treating diabetes, obesity, and other conditions that could be improved by a reduced intake of sugar. Berkeley, California, which passed a similar measure last year, has already seen soda consumption drop by 20% in some communities. Revenue is never my first choice. However, this is an option that reflects our commitment to public health, both by supporting and expanding the services we provide, as well as to helping encourage healthier habits. And while it's necessary, it's not the only solution in my budget recommendation. In fact, revenue accounts for less than half, 43% actually. More than half the solution is derived from our continued determination to drive down costs and increase efficiency across the county. After 6 years and $430 million in expenditure reductions, we're cutting another $78.5, almost $79 million this year, including $31.9 million in personnel cuts and an additional 1% reduction in our workforce. That represents 300 layoffs and 297 position eliminations. All offices, including my own, are being asked to do more with less. Our goal is to become more effective, but also more efficient in what we do, including one area I think you'll appreciate, jury duty. We found that we can be more efficient in how we utilize our citizens for jury duty. So working with the chief judge, we're reducing the number we call by 33%, or roughly 300,000 individuals, and thereby increasing the likelihood that those who call or are called upon will actually be asked to serve. We're reducing the inconvenience to our residents and saving money at the same time. I've always said that a responsible budget process doesn't just look at the challenges before us, but plans for the future. That was our objective in this year's budget. My budget lays the foundation for the next 3 years. That's why we're making a commitment that there will be no increase in tax rates for those next three fiscal years. A responsible budget must also balance our financial obligations with our ability to carry out our core mission. My recommendation addresses immediate challenges and maps out our financial horizon. It empowers us to build a community-focused agenda that pursues criminal justice reform, supports public health, enables economic development, and invests in infrastructure. I want to focus first on public safety because it's the majority of our budget and the core of our mission. Every single day, we're confronted with the news that yet another family has lost a loved one. Sons and daughters, mothers and fathers. There are too many weekends in which the news is summed up by a tally of those shot and killed. I know we all agree that these situations are unacceptable. At the same time, there's a rising tide of heroin and opioid deaths that is battering communities as well. And in addition, many communities less affected by violence. Both public health and public safety are challenged as never before. Gun deaths and fatal overdoses are the bold-faced type that can illustrate the deeper and more widespread losses due to addiction, the crime addiction drives, the violence symptomatic of unresolved trauma, and the lack of real jobs and opportunities. Ultimately, all of these issues and underlying causes are a threat to our economic and social health. Throughout much of the region, crime and violence remain at historic low levels, according to the Federal Bureau of Investigation statistics. But there are areas in Cook County, as in the rest of the country, where violence and crime are increasing. These are communities which are racially and economically segregated, where young men of color, traumatized by violence and poverty, lack opportunities for education and employment. These are the communities where violence flourishes. These are the struggling neighborhoods which people are fleeing, but where casualties are also increasing. Victims and perpetrators are one and the same, and innocent bystanders are caught in the crossfire. Victims and perpetrators can be neighbors, and family members can end up in prison. Here, the vicious cycle of violence continues uninterrupted. These communities aren't just found within Chicago. In fact, the crime rates in our western, in some of our western and southern suburban areas are just as high or higher than those in the most dangerous police districts in Chicago. And for those of you who don't call these communities home, let me remind you that safety, much like health, doesn't abide any boundary. It's impossible to have a violent community and a safe county, just as it is to have a sick individual and a healthy family. There is simply no way to address crime and violence without, at the same time, building more economically viable communities. I've made no secret that in order for our criminal justice system to be effective, it must be reformed, both in terms of how it treats our most vulnerable residents and how we allocate and spend tax dollars. This is centered on the need to reduce the over-reliance on pretrial detention. Coming into office, our jail averaged 10,000 detainees a day. Unnecessary detention, locking up thousands of people who could be released safely into the community to await their trial, costs too much money and damages too many lives. Each year, Cook County spends $330 million, a third of $1 billion, to maintain jail operations. The most troubling cost, though, is that when someone is detained who poses no flight risk or danger to themselves or others, it only increases the likelihood that they go deeper into the criminal justice system. The clearest example of the detrimental impact of our over-reliance on pretrial detention is reflected in the fact that over 50% of the people exiting our jail today will return within 3 years. There's clearly a better way to use our resources and serve our residents. As Cook County Board President, I'm not in the courtrooms or the tiers of the jail. I don't charge or defend. I don't pronounce judgment. My role has been and remains to advocate and raise awareness, to help shape sound policy decisions, and to facilitate the collaboration necessary for meaningful criminal justice reform. A critical part of this is supporting and partnering with our criminal justice stakeholders, and I thank them for their hard work each and every day. With the support and assistance of the Illinois Supreme Court, and I'm deeply indebted to Ann Burke, who heads our Justice Advisory Council, and other members of the court, and using an assessment tool identified by the Chief Judge, Tim Evans, we've been able to provide more complete, current, and relevant information to all parties involved regarding the risk and community ties of individuals going through bond court. In turn, we've been able to reduce the confined population in the jail by 25% over the last 3 years. Because of the steady decline, we're working with Sheriff Dart to reduce the size of the jail campus. Demolition will begin next month, starting with Division 3. The 30-year-old building with four minimum and medium security detainees. And next year, we'll demolish the other two divisions. Altogether, we'll save $1.3 million in annual operating expenses and avoid over $172 million in the required capital improvement costs to bring these buildings up to a state of good repair. I want to acknowledge Sheriff Dart and his office in this effort. We'll continue to work to reduce pretrial detention and address the racial disparities that still plague our system, despite the reduction in jail population. We'll continue to improve the bond court process, including implementing a long overdue court date reminder program. Because surely if you can get a reminder to show up for your dental appointment, we can do the same thing in reminding people to show up for their court dates. While we try to make our criminal justice system more fair and effective, we cannot overlook what brings people into the criminal justice system in the first place. We have to complement our criminal justice system improvements with effective community intervention and support. Since I took office, we've invested nearly $11.5 million in grants focused on addressing violence, reducing recidivism, and restoring justice. Going forward, we're doubling our annual commitment for these community grants. We've also made a commitment for resources for grants that require organizations to work together to transform our most at-risk neighborhoods. One of the programs we've partnered with is offered by the Center for Companies That Care, a local not-for-profit that is doing a wonderful job of getting corporate partners to extend new opportunities to young people. They mentor and support hundreds of students in public schools from middle school through graduation. In addition to academic and social support, they offer financial mentoring and guide students and their families through the financial aid and scholarship maze. They offer a career awareness internship for high school students. Students earn a stipend while exploring career opportunities that don't exist in their neighborhood, either where they live or where they study. As a teacher, I have to admit that I was pleased to learn that they're also teaching responsibility by holding students accountable for their actions. We asked Center for Companies That Care to include some students that were already involved in the legal system. Justice-involved youth, we call them. Students earned a stipend while exploring career opportunities that they previously did not know existed. This is not an expensive program, but it's an impactful one. Corporate involvement not only reduces the cost to provide the program, but gives it additional depth and diversity. This past summer, our group of young men and women got to visit Baxter Healthcare, Majid Glove, Power Construction, TTX, Fairmont Chicago, the Art Institute, the Nadler Financial Group, among other firms and institutions. We want to expand this type of programming, and this is only the beginning. Cook County is home to thousands of businesses that could be engaged, as well as thousands of young people who could benefit from the exposure. What we saw this summer indicates that justice-involved students can perform as well as other students. They engage in discussions, they ask great questions, and were just as stunned as the other young people when using their cell phone during work cost them a chunk of their stipend. One of my staffers sat in a session for the students at a downtown hotel, which provided a tour, engaging students who described their careers and a video of hotels around the world. The discussion went well until one young girl stopped the speaker in her tracks and asked a question. "I see you have beautiful hotels around the world. Why did you build a hotel in Chicago?" The presenter, a lively young woman from Great Britain, recovered from her surprise and answered, "Because this is a great city, a beautiful city." "No," the young girl replied, "no, not really. It does not look like the places in your video." "Chicago has been my home for 50 years. I'm proud to be a Chicago and Cook County resident. However, there's a reason why I started my discussion about public safety talking about neighborhoods. We have communities in the city and the county where due to crime, violence, isolation, an alternate reality is being shaped for our young people. We are committed, and increasingly successfully, to pursuing additional resources to support these communities. Just last week, we were awarded a $1 million federal grant, one of only six awarded nationally, to address youth violence in targeted south suburban communities of Harvey, Ford Heights, and Robbins. We're partnering with Strengthening Chicago's Youth program through the Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital, the Ford Heights Community Service Organization, and a host of stakeholders in these communities to provide coordinated prevention and intervention services, including trauma-informed care, to children and teenagers and young adults 10 to 24 who have been affected by the terrible violence in our communities. We can't alter the past, but we can make sure that these young people face a future with new resiliency. This is just one of the ways we're looking to invest in health care to address the impact of violence. Public safety and public health must work in conjunction. For too long, too many health issues were addressed in our criminal justice system. But jails are not designed to be treatment centers. I'm going to say that again. Jails are not designed to be treatment centers. We can't lock up everybody who needs treatment. It's far too costly, both for taxpayers and for the individuals who cycle in and out of our system without getting the necessary help to address their underlying health issues. I applaud the Cook County Health and Hospital System and Dr. Shannon for their commitment to our core mission to serve the most vulnerable and the critical role that they must play ensuring both the health and safety of our communities. We now serve as a major provider of substance abuse and mental health treatment in the region. Local, state, and federal cuts to social service agencies have been felt in our jail and our emergency room. This has only strengthened our resolve. Dr. Shannon and his team are implementing an ambitious behavioral health plan that includes expanding substance abuse treatment, integrating behavioral health care into primary care, and working to better link our justice-involved population to health care during both detention and post-release. With the valuable assistance of the Chicago Police Department, we've launched our first community triage center in Roseland. Modeled after successful programs in other cities, individuals with behavioral health conditions, whether substance abuse or mental health or both, can walk into the community triage center at any time and get stabilized and connected to community-based services. We expect the community triage center to further reduce our jail population, save financial resources, and most importantly, provide these individuals with better outcomes. It also provides the Chicago Police Department with an alternative to arrest. Just last week, the police department issued an order to allow officers to bring individuals to the community treatment center rather than book them and send them to county jail. Chicago police are facing a lot of criticism these days, but they've been great partners on this project. They've supported the Cook County Health and Hospital staff as they work to provide alternatives to a purely criminal justice approach to people teetering on the edge of crisis, detention, and even death. Our Cook County Health and Hospital system stands at a turning point. We have an historically low level of insured patient. Let me take that back. An historically low level of uninsured patients, a historically high level of insured patients, due in large part to the successful implementation of County Care, our Medicaid expansion program. Actually, Dr. Shannon reports that in the 1990s, when he first came to our healthcare system, about a quarter of our patients were insured, and now it's about 67%, two-thirds. We're building a modern integrated health system that is a provider of choice, not of last resort, for all of our residents. A critical part of this is renovating, rebuilding, and relocating community health centers in the coming years to provide our patients with the same modern facilities as our competitors, starting with the redevelopment of our Westside Health Campus, which will be underway shortly. We know that healthcare doesn't just happen within the walls of a doctor's office, and we're working to expand the definition of wellness through new programming. We're partnering with the Greater Chicago Food Depository on a countywide food access task force. Already, we've been able to implement food access screening at four of our clinics. Since the program started earlier this year, we've been able to provide fresh fruits and vegetables to over 1,500 households representing 5,100 individuals. By the end of the year, we expect to have integrated both the food security assessment tool and fresh food truck visits to all of our community health centers. At the same time, our Department of Public Health, under the leadership of Dr. Terry Mason, leads the charge on disease awareness, education, and prevention. This year, I'm calling for additional resources to be dedicated to awareness and screening for chronic illness, particularly diabetes, in the communities most at risk. To that end, we'll be using some of the revenue generated from the tax on sweetened beverages to planning for two lifestyle centers, one in the Austin community and one at Providence Hospital. Both will be fully staffed with dietitians, nurses, medical social workers, and exercise professionals. Access to exercise, health education, and other social support services is critical to our ability to assist individuals in preventing or managing diabetes or heart disease. This kind of comprehensive, preventive, community-based care is changing lives. I recently heard about one of our county care members. Formerly uninsured, she depended on the services of one of our partner agencies to deal with her type 2 diabetes. Under our care, she isn't just responding to health issues. She's benefiting from holistic health and wellness care. She was able to take nutrition classes and adopt a healthy diet, including cutting out soda, and has lost more than 100 pounds. Today, she's a frequent walker, an avid dancer, and an inspiration to her family and community. The opportunities provided to her through County Care have given her a new lease on life. It's important to tell her story here because our budget must be a reflection of our mission. That's true both of this budget and every budget I've presented. I'm very grateful to you for the opportunity to speak to you once again and look forward to your questions. Thank you.
So that conversation was, if the president had to help me because I almost fell, that would have been my most embarrassing moment, I'm sure. Do we have any other questions coming up? I have one question. I think you all do this to me on purpose when President Preckwinkle speaks. Latrice, are these questions? Okay. Thank you. I have to read it because the other question was... Oh, okay, you can actually see that. The question is coming from Thomas Hessen, and he's a City Club member from Riverbend Capital Advisors. And the question is, what is the outlook for the country, for the county's credit rating?
Well, as I think I said earlier, we went from negative to stable. Is that right? Ivan? Where are you, Ivan? Negative to stable. Yes, okay, good. And we have investment-grade bonds rather than junk bonds. Come on, there got to be more questions.
We do. We have a whole bunch of them here. But since I'm just reading them, just for old time's sake, Dr. Green is looking down, cracking up again. He is just like, ah. So I understand now what he said about penmanship, because I'm going to have to read this and you have to work with me.
All right.
You're the teacher, right?
Okay.
Tanya, Illinois Retail Merchants Association. Are you in the room? How are you going to ask a question and leave? Okay.
Let's not take that question.
Okay.
Go ahead. Let's take the question of somebody who's here.
Okay. So the next question is Bill Morton, Rogers Park, Chamber of Commerce. You're here, right? If you're not here, you don't get
right.
your question asked.
Good.
Okay. The question says, Cook County families face up to 68% increase in total price on their beverages if proposed tax passes. Where do we draw the line? Taxing works on families. No, taxing does not work on families. Why do we not consider another source of revenue?
All right, so first of all, I dispute your percentage. It's one cent an ounce, which is not, in my mind, a 68% increase in the total price of your beverage. But anyway, we're raising the price a penny an ounce. Let me just say, the first thing we did was make cuts. I told you that we... laid off 300 people, we closed 297 vacancies, eliminated 297 positions. We did a bunch of other stuff, but mainly layoffs and reducing positions. You know, I talked to the commissioners, I asked them, I said, we need revenue. What are you willing to support? There were no votes for a property tax increase because the county hasn't done this for 20 years and everybody's proud of it. There were no vote. There was one vote out of 17 to increase the sales tax a little bit more. And then we talk to people about sweetened beverages, and we think that we'll be able to get 9 votes for that. So when you need revenue, there's no point in proposing things that people aren't going to vote for. You have to try to find something that there's some consensus and people are willing to support. The other thing you have to remember, and Dr. Shannon has reminded us of this, the beverage companies target their advertising to some of our most vulnerable neighborhoods. In some of our poorest communities, kids get 25% of their calories from sweetened drinks. 25%. And the very communities that experience the most health disparities are the communities that are targeted by the beverage companies. So the people who most need our public health services are the people who are being targeted by the sweetened beverages companies. So I make no apologies for this. I think it's an effective way to raise revenue, and it has real good health consequences. When the World Health Organization tells governments that they ought to tax sweetened beverages, I think that's great third-party affirmation for what we're doing.
While she's talking about the sugar tax and everything, I believe there is an Alice Campbell maybe here from Baxter. Is she in the room? I know they're helping tremendously, so thank you. Just wanted to say thank you for that. Graham Grady says you've always been devoted to you've always devoted resources to developing the next generation of leaders. Please give us examples of young people that you're currently developing. I think you talked about that a little bit. Graham, are you in here?
He's in the back.
Okay, is there something further to that, or she kind of talked about that a little bit?
I'll say, you know, I'm very proud of the fact that my first chief of staff is now treasurer of the city of Chicago, Kurt Summers, and hopefully Kim Fox, who was more recently my chief of staff, will soon be the state's attorney of Cook County. I'm very proud of both of them.
Tim, I can't read your last name, from AECOM, asks, are you here?
AECOM, I think.
AECOM, okay. See, that's why she's the teacher. She can, like, read
the
stuff.
I know the company.
The question says, what is the county's approach to infrastructure and energy, talking in budget terms?
Okay, well, let me just speak to the infrastructure part. When we raised sales taxes last summer, it was principally to meet our pension obligations. We had a $6.5 billion unfunded pension liability, and we were accruing interest at the rate of $1 million a day, $30 million a month. And since we couldn't get help from Springfield to address our pension crisis, we did it ourselves as best we could. So I'm proud of the fact that we did that. We also said we're going to take a little bit of that money and spend it on infrastructure. We're going to stop diverting the motor fuel tax money that we've been diverting to public safety, which was permissible and which the city and the state and other local units of government had done. But we were going to stop doing it and put that money into infrastructure. And we just finished a long-range transportation plan after a couple of years of work. And one of the things that it encouraged us to do was to take a multimodal approach to transportation and focus not simply on roads and bridges, but also our freight infrastructure and transit. And so we're going to do that in the years ahead with some of the new money that we have gotten as a result of our ceasing to divert motor fuel tax funds.
Okay, I'm going to ask this question from former State Rep David Miller from Tenet Healthcare. What are your thoughts on public-private partnership for helping the county's mission?
Well, let me just say, we have lots of partners. I won't speak to the public-private partnership about it. Well, I guess it is public-private if you call not-for-profits private part of the economy. We have a county care program, a managed care Medicaid program that includes not just our two hospitals, Stroger and Provident, and our clinics, our specialty and primary care clinics, but 130 other partners. So basically every not-for-profit, community-based primary care clinic, all the safety net hospitals and all the academic hospitals are part of our managed care plan. So that's, we have a tremendous partnership in our county care program, and I think it's contributed to its success and vitality.
So I'm going to combine these questions because I think there is obviously some concern about tax increase, and Reed Macklin and Claudia Rodriguez have asked questions about the North Side small businesses and other Cook County businesses with respect to being able to still make viable income and pay wages.
Sure. You know, one of the things I think is important for elected officials is to get around their district or, in my case, the county as much as I can. And so over the last year, I've had a number of conversations with small business owners. One of their principal concerns is safety for their business, for their employees, for their customers. And, you know, we run the public safety system, and that's where we're investing a lot of our dollars. As I said, 87% of our money goes to public health and public safety. And so our investments in public safety, I think, contribute to, and we're trying with our anti-violence money and our anti-recidivism supports and restorative justice supports, not only to run the criminal justice system, but also to do work on the front end to try to keep people out of the criminal justice system and make our neighborhoods safer. So we're investing a good deal of our county resources in both public safety and public health, and I think in ways that are helpful to small business. You know, these are challenging times, and frankly, all of us in executive positions in this state at this point are, whether you look at the city or the county or the state, are struggling because we have not addressed our fiscal challenges for decades. You know, we just kept, you know, pushing things down the road. And, you know, if you're going to be responsible at some point, you have to say we got to take responsibility for where we are now and do our best to address our challenges and not expect our children, our grandchildren, to deal with these burdens. So
I think that we've all heard compelling information from one of the smartest, most intelligent people that we have in the city of Chicago and the county of Cook. You guys are supposed to clap after that. I set them up and they missed it.